Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it is coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams, and for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. I push button on a pick, I get it wrong. That's what's happened so far this year. Now, I will continue to rely on my success from last year because it's the only thing that can make me feel better about myself right now. What was my record last year, Anthony? Do we know? Do we still know that one?
Or I don't know the exact numbers, but I think you were about like between 8 and 10 games over 500 for the year.
Yeah, so 8 and 10 games over 500 for the year, and I believe I'm like almost 8 games under 500 right now, 6 games under 500. What am I, 2-8?
2-8, back-to-back, 1-4 weeks.
So just dreadful. So do not listen to what I'm about to say.
Better than the Dolphins.
Yes, who have zero. Being better than Dolphins is nothing to be proud of. Can I pick extra games this week to try and make up for it? Either bury myself deeper or try and get myself out of the hole? I'm gonna pick 7 games this week. Usually I do 5, but let's get going. All right. I'm going to go back to my strategy from last year, which was don't ignore the trends. Roll with the obvious. Roll with what's, you know, we know and what's hot. Like, for instance, last year, my main thing is I'm just going to pick the Chiefs every week, you know? So the inverse of that would be I'm going to pick against the Dolphins every week until proven otherwise. So I picked against the Chiefs last year every week until proven otherwise. This year, I'm going to reverse that strategy and pick against the Dolphins every week until proven otherwise. So give me the Cowboys minus 22.5. Over the Dolphins. That's a lot. It's a big spread. It's more than 3 touchdowns. But I think the Cowboys are amongst the best teams in the NFL. So give me the Cowboys minus 22.5 over the Dolphins, who are inept and terrible. And, you know, even last week when the Dolphins were playing the Pats, I forget what the spread was in that game, but it was like 21 or something like that. And it was early, and it was like, oh, man, it was still sort of tight, and the Patriots wound up absolutely destroying them. 43-0. The Dolphins, what do they have, 3 points in the last 2 weeks? I don't feel any different about Josh Rosen compared to Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Dolphins did manage 10 points in their first week, but they lost 59-10. So give me the Cowboys minus 22.5 over the Dolphins, one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the NFL against the probably worst team in the NFL. Continuing sort of off that, piggybacking off that, I'll take the Patriots minus 21 over the Jets. The Jets are god-awful right now, especially. Who's starting at quarterback for the Jets? Someone called Luke Falk. Is that the starter for the Jets? Because Sam Darnold has mono, and Trevor Siemian got hurt. Jets are bad. Not a good team. Just end the season. Started very early for them this year. And the Patriots, as much as we all want to root against it or think that Antonio Brown might have some adverse effect, they're insanely good. You watch them, they're sick. This team's just as good as it's ever been. The Patriots minus 21 over the Jets is my second pick. So that's Cowboys minus 22.5 over the Dolphins. Patriots minus 21 over the Jets. I wasn't in love with the Packers to start the year, but they are 2-0, and the Broncos look bad. The Packers minus 7.5 over the Broncos is my next pick, you know, simply because the Broncos don't look like a team that has any business competing. The Packers defense has been what's stood out to me. It's not like Aaron Rodgers has set the world on fire or anything like that. But at home against a bad Denver team with that Packers defense, I like the 7.5. I like Green Bay to cover that number. So give me the Packers minus 7.5. Next up, I'll take the Rams minus 3 over the Browns. The Browns, for all that hype that came into the season, Anybody could have beat the Jets on Monday Night Football. I didn't take anything away from that. Baker Mayfield has not looked good so far this year. He looks indecisive at the line of scrimmage. And the Rams are a team that happened to go to the Super Bowl a year ago, has also started the season off 2-0. So, you know, I'm not so sure that the Browns are actually a good team. And we know that the Rams are a good team, just picking up that dub over the Saints last week. So I'll take the Rams with the spread just being a field goal, -3 over the Cleveland Browns. I'll also take the Seattle Seahawks, -4.5 over the Saints. If I'm the Saints, I'm going to Taysom Hill to see what he's got. But it looks like Teddy Bridgewater will get the start for New Orleans. I don't have much confidence in what he's able to do. Obviously, Drew Brees being down is a big deal. I think that the Seahawks are back to being a strong competitive team this year. They've had a nice start to the season. They are at home in this one. So the Seahawks, I think, can win it by a touchdown. So -4.5, I'll take the Seahawks over the Saints. The Seahawks at 2-0 on the year. Both narrow victories. It's not like they've won by a bunch, but they beat Cincinnati in week one and then won on the road in Pittsburgh. Speaking of Pittsburgh, I'll take the Steelers +6.5 over the 49ers. I think that the Steelers are not the kind of team that spirals out of control. 6.5 is a lot of points to give them. And the 49ers may be better than we all thought, but I also don't think they're, you know, a truly contending team. So if that's the case, they're not going to just keep rolling off and racking up victories as the season goes along. And I think the Steelers will right the ship a little bit. So 6.5 is just a lot of points to give Pittsburgh in this era or most eras, to be honest. So I'll take the Steelers +6.5 over the 49ers. And finally, how about the Giants +6 over the Bucks? Maybe this is wishful thinking that there's something to be excited with the Giants about. And, you know, there's a reason to watch Saquon Barkley with Daniel Jones getting his first start. But again, you know, I'm just not comfortable with the Bucks in 6 points. Tampa, I'm not saying they're very mediocre, middle of the road. If Daniel Jones has anything at all, and with the Giants being at home, there's no doubt about it. The Bucks are at home. I'm sorry, the Giants are on the road. So I should just throw this away, but I'll continue to ride with it. I thought they were at home for a second. The Giants over the Bucks +6. Let's put some good karma in the air for the Daniel Jones era, beginning with the Giants. I'm not a believer in the Bucks, and it's obviously a big situation for the Giants. So to recap, that is the Cowboys -22.5 over the Dolphins. The Packers -7.5 over the Broncos. The Patriots -21 over the Jets. The Rams -3 over the Browns. The Seahawks -4.5 over the Saints. And the Steelers +6.5 over the 49ers. I should throw the Giants one out. Should I keep the Giants? No, I already put it on the record, right? Giants +6 over the Bucks. I cannot strike it from the record. Let's see if I will improve my record. The game of the week is what's going on with Baltimore and in Kansas City. And I almost took the Chiefs going back to last week, but I am really impressed by Baltimore early on this season and the strides Lamar Jackson has made. You know, we've seen a lot of the old guard of quarterbacks go down this season. Drew Brees, obviously Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning losing his job, and then all of a sudden a heated Hall of Fame debate with Eli Manning. I didn't realize people were so passionate about that. People get angry when you talk about Eli Manning and the Hall of Fame. But it has allowed for a bit of a changing of the guard. You could either look at it two ways. One, of wow, Tom Brady's still there. Or two, you've got this emergence of guys. Dak Prescott maybe has improved on what was a nice start to his career and become a real bona fide top-level quarterback. Lamar Jackson refined his game a little bit and is now an MVP contender. And then there's Patrick Mahomes, who to me is the best player in the game and the best thing going on about the NFL at this moment. But I'm going to talk to Austin Gale, senior NFL analyst at Pro Football Focus, about how much all of those trends are real or not coming up. Man, Anthony, did you think the Eli Manning Hall of Fame debate would... did you realize it was that heated?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been a hot topic here in New York forever.
To me, it's like a no-brainer. That's what's... like, you know, whether or not you like the guy or not, he's top 10 all-time in passing yards, top 10 all-time in passing touchdowns, never missed a game due to injury, and has two Super Bowl MVPs. And there's a lot of pushback like, well, if you took the Super Bowls away, he wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I agree.
But you can't.
Yeah, you can't. Like, since when? I oftentimes think that rings are overvalued a little bit, but they're all of a sudden dismissed when it comes to Eli Manning. I mean, like, those aren't normal rings either. They're over the Patriots. He threw 15 touchdowns to just two picks in those two playoff runs. You know, Philip Rivers, I don't think many people would argue, is a Hall of Famer. But in their respective primes, I'd take Eli Manning in a playoff game before I took Philip Rivers in a playoff game. So I don't think he's like a lock Hall of Famer on his overall statistical body of work.
Yeah, but, and the regular season numbers have a lot to do with that as well, because he's 500 as a quarterback in the regular season. So I think that's where a lot of people as well will come down against Eli Manning.
Well, I think it's like the smell test, right? They kind of feel like, oh, he's not good enough to be a Hall of Famer. And I get it. He never was like one of the best or the very best quarterbacks in the NFL. But when you have the cumulative totals, because I'm not saying they were based on being the best at any point in time, but he has a cumulative body of work that puts him in pretty rarefied air, and he has two Super Bowl MVPs, where he wasn't just like along for the ride in those Super Bowl runs. I kind of think that puts him in. Not to mention he's the best quarterback in the history of New York. Whatever that says about the other quarterbacks in the history of the New York, it's true. He's the best quarterback in the history of New York. So I think Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. 855-212-4227. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show on the frozen tundra. No, the crisp autumn of this New York afternoon. Robin Lundberg here, CBS Sports Radio. Talking some football, and you know, we're going to get to some on-the-field stuff. I guess the penalty flag stuff was on-the-field stuff, sort of. Antonio Brown... I don't know, you know, what planet that even deals with. And now we'll be joined by Austin Gale, senior NFL analyst at Pro Football Focus, to go over some of the on-the-field stuff. And whether you love fantasy football, gambling, or just an armchair general, or you're just an armchair general manager, make sure to go to pff.com to get premium stats and analysis. Use promo code QB25 to get 25% off your elite subscription today. Pro Football Focus, of course, does a great job actually, you know, pardon the pun, really focusing in on some of the intricacies of the NFL. And to that point, Austin, I want to talk about three quarterbacks first, who I would imagine, if we were doing the early MVP conversation that doesn't need to happen yet, would be at the top of those rankings. Let's start with the big showdown between Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. The Mahomes stuff is easy, but first with Lamar Jackson, how big a step do you think he has actually taken from last year to this year? Because he looks like a more complete quarterback through 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've been getting that question a lot doing these radio hits. And with Lamar Jackson, he looks significantly improved. His accuracy is so much better on downfield throws, but he's done it against bad defenses on a small sample size. Here at PFF, we graded every throw when he was at Louisville. He was one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks in college football as a rookie, one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks in the NFL. Through two games, he looks like a different player, but I'm going to lean towards the larger sample size. I think he's going to regress back to the mean a little bit, be a little bit more inaccurate than he has to start, but even if his accuracy improves slightly, maybe not to the rate it is now, but even a little bit down, he's going to be a lot better than he is last year, and this offense can be dangerous. If he can make plays through the air, explosive plays to Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews, this offense can be dangerous because it will be versatile, because you know they can ground and pound with Lamar Jackson's legs. They haven't even used those legs yet, really. Neither have they used Mark Ingram. Get those guys going and change your pace with an explosive play to Marquise Brown, this could be one of the better offenses in the NFL.
Now, on the other side, we know Patrick Mahomes is good, but, you know, he seems like a real outlier to me in the sense of, you know, in like fantasy football, the conventional wisdom is wait to draft a quarterback. I was kind of like, I don't know about that with Mahomes because, you know, he just seems like he's going to be a top point scorer consistently. When you look at quarterbacks across the board, how much of an outlier is Patrick Mahomes when you're analyzing him individually?
He's a massive outlier. The arm talent is absurd. It really is absurd. I think that's the first thing everyone says about Patrick Mahomes, but there's really nothing else to it. His arm talent, what he's able to do with the football, and that rocket he's got strapped to the right arm is incredible. It allows him to make all these crazy plays. It allows the Chiefs offense to be very versatile. He can make every throw. You always see that in like the scouting terms. He's a guy that can make every throw. Patrick Mahomes can make any throw he wants, cross his body into tight windows, cover two hole. He can do it. No-look passes, eyes closed. After a spin, he can do it. And I think that's what really separates him. And when you have that arm talent, what needs to happen next is that you need to hone it in. Because when you have that arm talent, you have a lot of confidence. You bring up Brett Favre, you know? Brett Favre has all this arm talent and a ton of confidence and a lot of turnovers as a result. If Patrick Mahomes can have this confidence but avoid the turnovers at the rate Brett Favre did, you're talking about one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL for a long time. He's going to be good for a long time. I think there's just so much to like about Mahomes' game, and if you can limit the turnover-worthy plays, he could be, you know, one of the greats in the NFL.
Robin Lundberg talking to Austin Gale, senior NFL analyst at Pro Football Focus. Another guy who's had a great start to the season is Dak Prescott, who's been polarizing, I guess, because he's the quarterback of the Cowboys. I've been in a lot of arguments where I would say Dak Prescott's a good quarterback and people would lash out at me. I'm like, you know, I just said good. I didn't say like, you know, absurd or excellent or whatever. But now he's starting to look like may be more than good. Where are you at with Dak Prescott right now?
I'm in a very similar spot to where I'm at with Lamar Jackson. Dak Prescott looks significantly improved from an accuracy standpoint on NFL throws. Throws 10-plus yards down the field and tight window throws. And he's doing it in a very good offense. So Kellen Moore is orchestrating a masterpiece. Highly play action rate, second most to the Baltimore Ravens leading the NFL, running a ton of bunch sets and pre-snap motion, allowing more open throws. When you run bunch sets, you don't need receivers that can create separation. You can create separation through scheme. That allows him to find a wide-open Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper way more often. Even Jason Witten is getting open in this offense. I think that's making Dak Prescott have a lot more success. I think, again, is it sustainable? We'll see. I believe in a scheme change. Like, scheme is so important in the NFL, and if Kellen Moore keeps this rocking, you could see it sustained longer than maybe Lamar Jackson's accuracy. That's why you really have to like Dak to potentially make a chase for MVP. I really think so, because if this offense is sustainable and Dak can stay healthy and keep this thing going, he's going to finish this year as one of the highest-graded quarterbacks in the NFL.
Now, this is the present. Let's go to the past a little bit, history. The debate that has raged on this week since Eli Manning was benched and Daniel Jones stepped in is whether Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. Where do you fall there?
I think he is. He is a Hall of Famer. He had two Super Bowl rings against one of the, you know, the dynasties of the NFL, played very good in a short period of time, and won it all. You know, I think you have to bring up the Super Bowl rings to Eli Manning. It shouldn't change because he's been really bad in recent years. And what really matters is when he was at his best, he was one of the best, if not the best, in the NFL, winning two Super Bowl rings. You know, it's mixed opinion in the PFF offices, but I'm going to side there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes I think we overvalue rings a little bit in propping up a guy's legacy, but then we can't be obsessed about rings and all of a sudden dismiss them when it comes to Eli. And it's
exactly.
it's not a Joe Flacco situation where it was once. And, you know, it happened twice. And the team that they played against. Do you guys do weighted gradings on any of your stuff? Or is it you find it best, like the methodology, to keep it the same across the board so that you're not getting caught up in any narratives, or is there ever a time that you attach extra weight to the situation or the moment?
You know, that's a great question. Our 0 to 100 grades that are available in our consumer products, our Edge and Elite subscription, are not weighted. They're graded the player they played against. It does not matter opponent. They're not opponent adjusted, but NFL teams and NCAA teams that do purchase our data have an interest in our opponent adjusted grades, our MAFI rating grades. We use, especially for college football, you need to do opponent-adjusted grades in addition to the kind of classic 0-100 grades, because you're playing, you know, UL Monroe against Clemson, and you need to kind of adjust the grades to see how good of a player is against Power 5 competition, against more than 3-star recruits. And those opponent-adjusted grades are very predictive. You know, they have a lot of predictive power year over year. You'll see opponent-adjusted grades have great predictive power going from college to pro, or even just year-over-year at the college or NFL level.
Is there anybody's grade so far this year that's really just surprised you? Like, I can't believe this is the number that's next to this person's name?
I think Quan Alexander has our highest coverage grade of any linebacker in the NFL right now, and that's pretty incredible. He's never been a great coverage linebacker in our system. I think a lot of it is on a small sample size. He had a great interception that's going to get a heavy positive grade on that play, and I think that surprised me. Seeing Quan Alexander, who has always been in the 60s in coverage grade every year of his career, to be up there right now is a little surprising.
Austin, appreciate the time, man. Thanks. Great work you guys do.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Eli Manning, Hall of Famer or not, that's been a debate this week. Some of you guys want to weigh in on that. I'll take your calls, and then I'll get to every topic I have not as of yet. Reggie in Tampa. Reggie, you're up first here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
Rob, you know I love you like I love my wife, although differently.
All right.
Here's the thing.
I'll take
it. Oh, I love you, though. You know, you're my guy. Listen, here's the thing. Eli Manning, I'm going to tell you about me real quickly. I play Division I basketball. I grew up in Pensacola, Florida. I have friends who are great. Roy Jones, Derek Brooks, Emmitt Smith, although Emmitt doesn't claim Pensacola. All right, they're great.
Agreed.
And the comparison to Joe Namath is lazy, because if Joe Namath played between 2010 and 2019, he would not be a Hall of Famer. And I get all the historical data, but think about this. Eli, who I love, if his name was Levi Ganning, he wouldn't be a Hall of Famer. He will get into the Hall of Fame because of his name. But just look at what he's done over a period of time. And longevity is important, but it doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. He has been below average or average more than he's been above average. He's never been.
That's not true, Reggie. That part, you might say.
Talk to me, Rob. Talk to me, Rob.
Yeah, he might not be elite, but he's been above average his whole career. I mean, he's even been. He's been good.
Look at the totality of his career, okay?
Yeah, I am.
I'm not saying he hasn't never been above average. I said the totality of his career. Look at all the years.
Well, he's got 362 touchdowns to 241 picks, 60% completion percentage. What's his career quarterback rating is 84.1. Yeah, that's good. It's not the doors off good. So if
when
it wasn't
you say good.
Go ahead.
But when you say good, does that mean Hall of Fame?
Well, the Hall of Fame is influenced by the two Super Bowl runs.
You just said it's been good. The way you just said it, does that maybe I have different criteria for Hall of Fame?
Well, no. Because he wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame without the two Super Bowl runs. But you're talking about where he was excellent. Like, he was elite. Part of, we'll make the playoff his name in those two Super Bowl runs. 15 touchdowns to just two picks in those two Super Bowl runs,
so
including beating the undefeated Patriots.
So was Joe
beating
Flacco
the Patriots twice.
Time.
But Joe Flacco didn't do it twice. He didn't do it twice. He didn't beat the Patriots.
I want to ask you a question. Ask you a question. All right. When you look at those teams, what do you think about the greatness of Eli Manning, or was it defense? Did they score like 30 and 40 points?
Both. You can't ignore what Eli did in those playoff runs. Sorry,
I like Eli. I like Eli a lot. I like the fans. Great people.
In 2011, Eli completed 65% of his passes in the playoffs.
You're talking about 1 year, dog.
1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick.
And Rob, I know you got a lot of calls to go, but I'm going to ask you this. I think about this.
Yeah.
Scott Mitchell for the Miami Dolphins. He got a huge contract because of what he did for that period of time. All I'm saying is this.
Well, what does that have to do with Eli Manning, Scott Mitchell's contract?
I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there. I will hang about this. Listen, I think he will get in, but man, when I think about Hall of Fame players, okay, when I think about it, all right, because I played basketball at a high level at the University of Miami, I wasn't a Hall of Fame by no means, but I've been around Hall of Fame players. But when I think about Hall of Fame, just me personally, man, Eli doesn't even come into
that. That's what I said before. I think for the smell test for people, they don't think he was good enough. Yeah, but if I'm removing any emotion from it, if I just take the resume and I say this, Reggie, removing any emotion from it, and I say this player is top 10 all-time in passing yards, top 10 all-time in passing touchdowns, yep. never missed a game for injury, and yep. is a two-time Super Bowl MVP. You're saying no to that as a Hall of Famer.
I'm saying this. I'm saying Hall of Admirable, not Hall of Fame. That's all I'm saying.
We're going to make a new museum for Eli Manning. All right, let's go to Brian in Greenville, South Carolina. Brian, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
Good. How are you, Evan?
What up?
Eli Manning, to me, is not a Hall of Famer when the only stats that you have ever led the National Football League in is interceptions.
Is that the only stat he's ever led? I mean, I know he probably did, but is that factual that he's never led the NFL in any other statistical category? I don't know if that's factually true.
It's fair. Look it up. He's only led the NFL in one category three times, and that's interceptions.
Well, he's definitely thrown some interceptions, but Brett Favre is the all-time interceptions leader. I mean, it's not like great quarterbacks haven't thrown interceptions in the past. Oh, no response? I mean, Brett Favre's better than Eli Manning, by the way. But, you know, like, you can be, you know, have a high amount of interceptions and still be a great player. How about Shane in Indiana? Shane, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Robin, love the show, but you are off your rocker on this one, man.
Off what, my rocker? I mean, like, you could say I'm wrong, but it's not like it's a crazy opinion.
What are your qualifications for the Hall of Fame, other than he had two seasons with four good games?
The guy's top 10 in the history of the sport in passing touchdowns and in passing yards and is a two-time Super Bowl MVP. To me, that gets you in.
If you were to put him in the Hall of Fame, would that be like the Mendoza line? I mean, honestly, would he be like at the bottom of qualifications for the Hall of Fame because he's got two Super Bowl wins?
I guess it depends on how much value you're putting in the Super Bowl wins, right? Because the guy was stellar in those Super Bowl runs. Like, it wasn't like he accidentally won those Super Bowls. He was great. He won in tough conditions against good teams in Lambeau, right? Against that San Francisco team that was quite good. Obviously, over the Patriots twice in heroic fashion. You know, and the Patriots, what have they only caught three L's in the Super Bowl? The only other one's to the Eagles. So what else do you say about him?
Okay, so since he's got two Super Bowl wins, would you take him or Warren Moon on your team? If you could start him in their prime, would you take Eli or Warren Moon?
I think they're probably close, to be honest. I'd have to go back and – but, I mean, Warren Moon, I bet you his statistical profile is pretty close to Eli Manning's. You know,
Eli or Dan Marino?
Dan Marino.
I mean, okay, well, I'm saying there are plenty of guys who don't have two Super Bowl wins.
I'm not saying that Eli Manning is the best quarterback in NFL history or that there aren't better quarterbacks, you know, in the Hall of Fame. But there are also, again, Troy Aikman and Eli's statistical – I mean, Eli played in a slightly better era. The era went, you know, started to favor passing more. But it's close between those two guys. I'm just curious on the Warren Moon thing. Eli has more passing yards, a better completion percentage than Warren Moon, and a better touchdown-to-interception ratio than Warren Moon.
If he gets in the Hall of Fame, it's on Peyton's coattails. But
I don't think Peyton has anything to do with it. I disagree with that. If he gets into the Hall of Fame, it's because he won the Super Bowl twice.
He's also beloved by the media.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's been nice, right? Like, that helps. But, yeah, I don't think it's Peyton. I don't think Peyton has any, you know. The Manning name didn't win those Super Bowl games. That's why he's going to get in if he gets in, because he won the Super Bowl twice over the Patriots. Super Bowl MVP, and it ain't hard. All right, time to get to every topic I have not in another one. Anthony, what's up first, man?
The NBA looking to crack down on player-to-player as well as team tampering. And the new tampering rules include bigger fines and team audits, changes to traveling, and lineup submission. Do you like the new tampering rules, and will they have an impact?
I mean, at a certain point, it's just something you can't really enforce. I understand what the NBA is trying to do. I understand, I think, particularly what Adam Silver is trying to do. He is addressing, he works for the owners. That's how the commissioner role works, right? He works for the owners. So he's being crushed behind the scenes by these small market teams who feel like they don't have a fair chance because the players don't want to play with those in those places if they have their own choice and if they're empowered the way that NBA players have been empowered. I mean, it is a joke that free agency can start on, I think it was 4 p.m., on a Sunday or whatever, 6 p.m. on a Sunday. And we know, like, where Durant and Kyrie and all these guys are before that even happens. And we knew who Kemba the day before. I think Kyrie the day before even. So clearly teams are not abiding by the rules. So I understand that he wants to set a message that, you know, you have to actually abide by the rules, and that's the message they want to get across. But it's really a very difficult and impossible thing to enforce. I mean, some of the tampering stuff is ridiculous. Like when somebody makes a comment like, hey, what do you think of Kawhi Leonard? He's a great player. Tampering. I mean, like, that's not tampering. That's just answering a question. As far as the communications, what's going to be the hardest to do without seizing cell phones is stopping players from talking to one another. And it just seems to me like this is more Adam Silver probably trying to satisfy some of the owners and their crying behind the scenes.
Sticking with the NBA, Doc Rivers said this week that the Clippers knew that OKC wanted to break their team up. You buying Doc Rivers' story?
I mean, what other incentive would he have to say it? I guess I would buy it. Why would he lie about that? What would be the reason for him saying it? I don't know if that's because he had heard from Paul George. You know, he may have heard the through the grapevine that Paul George wanted to force his way somewhere because the Clippers had been pursuing Kawhi Leonard, no secret, for more than a year, right? Like the Clippers put this plan in place at least a year in advance. The summer before, I was talking to one of their executives, and he, you know, coyly admitted to me that they were all systems go for Kawhi Leonard the following summer. So could they have found out about Paul George that way? Russell Westbrook is a guy whose frustrations may have made their way around the NBA. So I just hesitate to call Doc Rivers a liar about this. There's no reason for me to call him a liar. So I imagine they got wind of something, whether it was, you know, exact proof that this was going to happen with Oklahoma City. I doubt it was that cut and dry, but I'm sure the talk was out there.
Major League Baseball, the Marlins agree to a contract extension for manager Don Mattingly. Is it the right decision to bring back Donnie Baseball?
I mean, what else are they going to do? They're the Marlins, right? I mean, there's still a name attached to Mattingly where, you know, in New York, they were pining for him around the Yankees for a while there simply off of what he did as a player. But, you know, when you're taking a look at the Marlins and their overall profile, it's not exactly a team that is thought of as a perennial powerhouse. So any success that they've had or something that they think they're building on, I don't have any problems with them making a move. Though it's tough to look at their record and here's the problem with any take on this, right? We know this team has not thought of winning right now as their top priority. So I can't really judge them on their winning right now. To me, this is, I guess, more about organizational stability in the meantime while they hope that the chickens come home to roost and they have an Astros situation in the future.
All right, finally, Robin, happy birthday to Batman. On Saturday, September 21st, which is today, 1939, Batman was created. So it turns 80 years old today. So I'll ask you your favorite and your least favorite at the live action Batman movies. What's your favorite? And
well, first of all, I loved the TV show growing up. Da-na-na-na-na. You know, Batman and Robin are trapped by Mr. Freeze. They're about to be lowered into a cryogenic chamber. Will their feet burn from the frostbite of the cryogenic chamber? Find out in the next episode. Same bat time, same bat channel. Da-na-na-na-na. You know, that was a good show. As far
and that became a movie.
Yes. But that was more like a campy comedy. The Batman character itself is actually a very dark character. I'm gonna go with the easy answer. The second one of the Nolan movies.
The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight. I forget the titles, but I think The Dark Knight Rises is overrated. I don't think that movie's that good. But I like the first two, Batman Begins, and I think The Dark Knight is clearly the pinnacle of Batman cinematic achievement.
And the worst? What's your worst?
I mean, Batman and Robin, right? One of those...
Yeah, Batman
The
and
Schumacher
Robin.
Batman movies. Yeah, they were terrible. I mean, like, the Dark Knight Rises, I think, is overrated, but it's not like a flat-out, like, awful movie. Those ones are flat-out awful movies. And I'll be back, same Robin time, same Robin channel next week. CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.